How are you, mate? You all right?
Oh, not too bad, thanks, Paul. Not too bad. How are you on the other side of the Pennines? You doing all right?
Very well, thanks for asking. Yeah.
Oh, good stuff, good stuff. I know you're making the journey across on the 21st of October, Bridlington Spa. You looking forward to that one?
Yeah, Brid's always on the list. It's a great venue. And it's got happy memories, that course, because when my very, very first gig I ever did on my own stand-up years and years and years ago was down the course at Scarborough. And I won a talent show there. I can't remember when, 1999 or something ridiculous. And I got supported by a lot of local people who sort of took me to them, and I'm still in touch, and they're all coming to Brid, so Pat Helm and all that from over there, they're still in touch, we still send Christmas cards and stuff, so it's got very happy memories, that course.
Oh, smashing stuff, and you talk punchlines, it's been going here and there and everywhere, Dave, and I have to admit, you know, one of these things that I've seen over, it's been going for quite a while now, but when the comedians start and come together and think, right, we're gonna start naming tours, Dave, because it wasn't always the case with this sort of thing.
No, it wasn't, it was just like your name, what that was, it wasn't it, Dave Spikey, Scarborough, whatever, or Bridlington. I need a theme, you see, and I think, I don't know why, I find that audiences prefer, rather than just a random selection of stories and jokes and whatever reminiscences, I think they prefer a link, so it's like a cohesive show. So that's how I think that's how it started. That's how it started for me anyway. Like my last tour was Words Don't Come Easy, all about the English language. I'm fascinated with it. And then the tour before that was the Best Medicine Tour, which, you know, laughter's the best medicine and all that. And I obviously have a background in biomedical science, so I brought that into it. And it helps me write it as well, and it helps me focus on it. And I think it flows better if you've got a theme. And Punchlines was one that just came to me because I read in a magazine somewhere that the brain's a pattern-making machine, and once the pattern's been made, the story's been told, you've got to the conclusion, it gets filed away. So it could be anything, a gossip, it could be just a story from down the pub or whatever. So that if somebody comes to you the next day and starts telling you the same story, your brain immediately leaps to the conclusion. You go, oh, I've heard, I know all about that, you know. So, but just as an aside, it said that's why we don't laugh at jokes the second time round, because, you know, we know the punchline, basically. And I started thinking about that and wondering whether I could challenge that and whether I could go on in the right before the show and project a load of punchlines and then so give them the punchlines. So doing it like a comedy show in reverse, give them the punchlines. And then spend the rest of the show explaining how it's going to work. That I'm in the second half of the show, I'm going to come on and do the jokes, and they will still laugh. And we examine the nature of the punchline and what is defined as a punchline, and it works brilliantly. And they've really bought into it, audiences.
Absolutely love it. I think that's the best, most intelligent answer I've had on the daytimes, Dave. I have to say, right, that is absolutely brilliant. Because I didn't find this out until a little bit earlier on today, that you do have that background in biomedical science, and it did totally throw. I mean, how did you make that leap at the time, Dave?
Oh, it's a natural progression, Danny. It's like you work your way up and you become a chief biomedical scientist in haematology, and then you think, what's next? Stand up, obviously. It was weird. It was a long story short. I got involved in the local amateur dramatics in the hospital. We all had a review society. Basically, just went there to meet nurses and not have a drink. And found myself, I had a bit of a gift, a talent for writing sketches and pantomimes and then directing them. I had no ambition to get on stage. And sooner or later, somebody drops out because it's like medical profession, somebody gets called away or whatever. And I ended up on stage, and I found out when I stepped on stage that I really didn't want to do it. I was really nervous about doing it, and I found that I loved it when I was on there because I loved getting the laughs backstage from the stuff I'd written, but it was a different, obviously, as you can imagine, it's a different thing altogether, seeing them laughing. And then, of course, somebody says to you the immortal words, you're really funny, you should be a comedian. And you think, you know what, you're right, I'm hilarious. Well, I've never thought of that. But it took me 10 years. I continued to work in the hospital, and I was nipping off at night and driving down to London. And I used to, you know, you drive all the way down and do 10 minutes open spot just to see if they book, then drive all the way back, and then I'd start another late shift after that in the hospital. I don't know why I did it, because I was like chief in haematology. I was in charge of the haematology department. I'm not madly ambitious, but I think if you've got anything about you, you just want to get better. Whether it's at your job or at a hobby or whatever, of a talent like music or whatever, you just want to improve, don't you? And I wasn't driven, but I just wanted to get better. And then I was around that era where Jack D and Eddie Izzard and people like that were coming up to the Northwest, and they needed the support act, and there was nobody about, really. There was me and Dave Gorman around about that time. And so I got a lot of these gigs, and I worked with all these big names when I just started out. I was working at the hospital and going out at night and supporting Jack D, like I say, and Eddie Izzard and Lee Evans and Joe Brandon, learning so much from them. And they were very, all universally, without any exception, helpful with their advice about how I should progress and how I should go down to London and what agents I should look at and what venues I should look at. And that was a big lift at the time.
Yeah, and Dave, I've got to ask as well, because obviously you've been involved in comedy for quite some time, and you've been there at the top there as well for a long time as well. You know, how much has comedy changed? You know, for young lads, you know, young women try to break through into the game now, how much has it changed from the days that you started getting involved?
I think it's changed in all sorts of ways. I think it's a proper profession now. I think people use stand-up to get into, you know, into television more and get into making, writing sitcoms and then eventually getting into films. And I think it's more of a level profession. I just did it, and I think a lot of people did it when I did it because we just loved doing it, and we didn't really have any grand plans. We didn't have any great master plan. So I think that's one way it's changed. But I think another massive way is when I first started, even around Manchester, there was one regular comedy club. And so the opportunities were very limited, and so you had to go further afield. There'd be one in Liverpool, there'd be one in Sheffield, there'd be one in, you know, down London, a few down in London, but one in Bristol. And you find yourself having to schlep all over the country just to work your act, you know. And now, you open your local listings paper, and there'll be a comedy night on every night, maybe two or three on every night. And I think the opportunities are far superior than they were when I was doing it. You know, I think easy is not the right word, but it's still a tough gig getting up on stage and doing it the first few times. But it's easier, it's more accessible, you know, so I think it's more appealing these days.
Yeah, I think you're right there. And I've got to bring up Dave as well. I've got to bring up Phoenix now. I'm a massive fan myself, I have to
admit.
And yeah. I know that there's loads and loads of fans that are still about now, and it's still one of the greatest comedies of my lifetime, and a lot of people would say that. I mean, when you look back at that, Dave, and when you look at it now, and people still coming up to you and asking you about Phoenix now, it must be something that you're just really proud of being involved with.
It's wonderful. I get a little bit of a tingle down my neck, down my spine when I think about it, you know, because Every single day, either on social media or if I'm in town or I'm walking, wherever I am, even if I'm in London, if walking about, people will come up and say how much they miss it and how much with the wish there had been another series and that character and that character. And it really did connect, you know. And we did the big comic relief thing at Manchester Arena last year, early on, and we got 15,000 people a night for 15 nights and made 5 million for comic relief. And you think after all this time, it was finished in 2002, 2003,
yeah.
And you're thinking it's like 13, 14 years ago now, and it's still got that massive appeal, and it's incredible, really. It's incredibly humbling and satisfying, because when you're writing it, you know you've done your best, you know you've done good work, because the three of us wrote it, me and Peter and Neil, and I think that helps, having three different takes on every scene, so you don't move on until you've explored every single possibility of a gag. And I think that's half the appeal of Phoenix, is that you can come back to it and watch it. Maybe tomorrow get your box set out and you will still maybe notice something that you've never noticed before, sort of thing. Mm. And the characters, everybody just resonated with everybody. We just used characters that we all knew, really. And I think that helped.
Yeah, you're right there. And the people you're working with at the time, those fellow comedians as well, it must have been great working with them at the time as well.
Oh, you coached a lot of... And that was the thing, you know, we just cast all lads off the comedy circuit. There was very few actors involved. I mean, Neil had done a bit of acting, and he still does. He's a great actor, Neil Fitzmaurice. And Steve Edge, who was, in Los Altos, Alanoff, the backing band. And but we didn't know what we were doing, really, half the time. We just had a brilliant laugh. And it got a bit... When you're on set and you've got time constraints and budget constraints and all that, it can get a bit, people can get a bit annoyed at you. Not messing about, but just messing up, because all that continuity and all the things that you learn as an actor, which hand you're holding your pint in and when did you say that and how did you say it, it just goes out the window because we're not trained, we didn't know. And I think that rawness, I think that it made it more real, you know.
I think you're right there. I was just wondering as well, do you still come up, people come up to you in the street singing the black bin bags to you, sir? Anything like that?
Every week, mate. And, you know, you're in, I mean, Asda or wherever, and somebody will sidle up to me, slightly embarrassed, and go, Dave, I've been looking around, we're at black bin bags. And I have to pretend that I've never heard it before, and I'm like, you are so hilarious. You know? And I usually say, I don't know, it's set me three circuits, find me toilet duck. You know what I mean? So they changed it all around again.
Oh, absolutely brilliant, Dave. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Bridlington Spa, 21st of October. Make sure you go down and see Dave. Should be an absolutely cracking show. Dave, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks a lot for joining us here on the Daytimes.
Oh, you're welcome. And then they were on offer till December, so plenty of time.